We'll call the meeting to order. I don't know if we have a quorum yet, so I know people have checked in and out. I should probably go check into my other two committees, too. We're going to just start right away. No, we don't have enough. Morrow is not here.
Yes.
So Representative Morrow, yes, sir.
If our colleagues don't show up, can we have their pie?
Yes, you can. This pie is, by the way, apples picked from the government's orchard, which is his backyard. Made by he and his wife, and it's absolutely delicious.
And the ones on the far end are Splenda, and this end are Sugar.
And the one with the laxative. Welcome to the committee, Representative Morrow. Why don't you start with House File 1149, and we'll just not act on it right now until we get a quorum.
And Mr. Chair, thank you very much, members. We have, you'll see two files, 1149, which is a $2 million appropriation, and then House File 1150, which is a $500,000 appropriation. The Center for Rural Policy and Development is located in St. Peter, literally outside my living room window. I keep an eye on Dr. Geller. I'm going to introduce Dr. Jack Geller, President of the Center for Rural Policy and Development, to talk about the two bills and the funding for the center.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jack Geller. I'm President of the Center for Rural Policy and Development in St. Peter, Minnesota. It's my pleasure to have the opportunity to speak to you today about the center, and feel free to continue eating your pie.
It's actually organic apples.
I'll tell you, I don't go to too many committee meetings that serve such good fare, so maybe I'll just come in and hang out for a while and see if it might be replicated. As many of you know, the center was created by the Minnesota State Legislature 10 years ago in 1997 to provide nonpartisan, unbiased, and as we say, politically unspun information on the forces that are impacting rural Minnesota's future. And since 1997, we've worked quite hard to fulfill that mission. Today, policymakers know more about the adoption and diffusion of broadband throughout rural parts of our state than policymakers in any other state. This week took the initiative back in 2001 to start collecting that information, and we've collected it every year. In 2003, when then-Senator John Hottinger asked the center to start closely monitoring the activities of the soon-to-be-initiated Job Z program, we did just that, and in fact, we've subsequently issued 5 reports on the Job Z program, not to report that it's a good program or a bad program, but to provide good objective information to policymakers to allow them to make their own evaluative judgments. And in 2005, when legislators such as Representative Gunther and Representative Al Junkie turned to us expressing concern about the academic outcomes of Latinos and Latino students in our public schools, we again conducted research and compiled information about this important topic. I should say you do have a packet of information about the center in front of each of you. I suppose it all comes down to our mission, quite frankly, to provide policymakers, and when I say policymakers, I mean state legislators, county commissioners, city officials, with good, unbiased information about issues that are affecting rural Minnesota communities and rural Minnesotans so they can make better decisions. In addition to our research, you're probably aware of some of our signature products. Just to name two, you're probably all aware of the Rural Minnesota Journal, which we've been publishing for a year and a half now. We've distributed more than 3,500 copies, leaving no county behind, if you will. And to say it's a huge hit is really an understatement. And if you've ever been online to our website and seen the Atlas of Minnesota online, this is a tool that provides information on every county, every school district. If you want to know everything from childhood vaccination rates to DWI arrests to the percentage of eighth graders who pass the basic skills math test in every school district and every county in the state, that information is available. It's all free to the end users at absolutely no cost. And I should say, everything we do is free to the end user at no cost. I would argue in some ways we've become the de facto rural affairs department for the state of Minnesota, and while I'm not remotely suggesting that we establish such a rural affairs department, I am saying that while the Metropolitan Council does a great job of tracking an enormous amount of data and information on issues that are important to the Twin Cities Metro, I would like to think that somewhere in state government there should be support for an organization that's dedicated to providing such information to the other 80 counties outside of the Twin Cities Metro area. So let me just say a few brief words about our funding. As you may know, in 1997, the state established the center with a $250,000 annual appropriation, and in addition, it provided a $2 million set aside as an endowment. They provided us, essentially, with an annual working budget of roughly $350,000. Mr. Chair, as you know, over the years, that $250,000 appropriation is now reduced to $150,000, and in 2003, that $2 million went away to help resolve some of the state's large budget deficit at that time. Today, the total annual public contribution to the center is $150,000, roughly 43% of what it was 10 years ago back in 1997. And that's in real dollars. That's not counting inflation. Matter of fact, I don't really want to think about what it means in terms of actual purchasing power if we counted in inflation. But while the public commitment to the center was decreasing, our commitment to rural Minnesota increased. In fact, today we're more responsive and doing more than we've ever done before. And to be honest, we even want to do more. Right now we're planning to establish a new biennial report on the status of rural Minnesota, a study that would come out every 2 years that would allow us to track key indicators about the rural economy, rural demographics, rural business development, and essentially emerging opportunities. Of course, we're able to do this because while the public commitment has been declining, the private commitment has actually been increasing. Back in 1997, the legislature challenged us to establish the center as a public-private partnership. And to be honest, over the years, the private side of the partnership has been doing quite well and holding up its end. But the public commitment has significantly declined. We're not asking you to cover all our expenses. We're not asking you to float the whole boat. We're asking you to increase your commitment and increase your share in this public-private commitment. And House File 1150 essentially requests just that. I hope you agree that over the past 10 years, we've proven our value. The simple reality is I'm unaware of any other organization in Minnesota that does what we do. If we don't do it, it just doesn't get done. Finally, one last note about the loss of our endowment. This was money that was appropriated to us and designed to never be spent, but rather funds that we can grow, invest, and utilize the interest. Simply put, when you take away an organization's endowment, you take away its future. House File 1149, the bill to return that $2 million to our endowment, is not designed to be funding that we'll ever spend. Rather, it's a one-time expenditure designed to return that money to our endowment where it once was, where it'll be invested and it'll grow and provide the future stability that all organizations seek. So with that, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I want to thank you for this hearing, and I'd like to thank for your attention.
Thank you, Mr. Geller. You weren't the only one called out, caught up in the unallotment thing, my man. $50 million here.
Yes, I'm quite aware, Mr. Chair.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I did vow to help you with your $50 million. I remember when the center was first established, the goal was to have $10 million in the endowment. It was envisioned by Tracy Beckman and Doug Peterson and many others. We got a lot of sidelines, but unfortunately, we did unallot that. We worked very hard to get money to keep the operations up. And I was on the center's board when all this stuff happened, and I was on the chairman of the committee that did it.
And they left you out of meetings alive?
I tell you what, it wasn't fun move. In fact, those years weren't fun for any of us. But the center has certainly proved itself worthy for all of us. the Center for Rural Policy and Development is Greater Minnesota's Met Council. This is where we get research done for those issues that represent your district as well as mine. So I think this is something that we need to do so the disparities between the metro and Greater Minnesota don't grow anymore.
Well, put Representative Gunther, do you have any idea where I get the money for it?
No, but I'll look.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions of Mr. Geller or Representative Morrow? Representative Gunther then moves that House File 1149 be recommended to pass and laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And would you, and we'll, we don't need to vote on that, and you also will move 1150, I assume.
I will.
With the same motion. So Representative Gunther moves that both bills be recommended to pass and laid over for possible inclusion. We thank you very much for your input, and we know the important job you do, and we'll see what we can do to help out.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Moore, why don't you just stay right there then and do House File 1471, which Representative Welty moves to be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Higher Education Workforce Development Bill. Representative Moore.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a very quick item. The Minnesota Agricultural Education Leadership Council came before the Agricultural Policy Committee earlier in this session, and we were talking about the membership of that council, and I noted that it might be appropriate to have a private college represented up on the council in order to talk about ways in which agricultural education might be infused within the private college's teacher education programs. I had a chance to ask Julie Pesch, the executive director for MALC, who agreed. I talked to the contact of the Minnesota Private College Council, which indicated it would like to have a representative on this council. So I come now with that file to make that addition of one spot on the Minnesota Agricultural Education Leadership Council. If you have to answer questions, and I know Ms. Les is also, Ms. Tetz is also happy to answer any questions.
Any questions of tomorrow? Or it seems like, especially if everybody's, there's no opposition.
There's no opposition.
Anybody in the audience want to talk against it? Senator Janovich? Okay. Sounds good to me. Thank you, then, very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
Okay. Representative Peterson, timely entry into the room. Representative Peterson, and the bill is similar to Representative Poppy's. Do you both want to? Or we'll just take yours first. Representative Poppy moves that House File 1654 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the Higher Education Workforce Development Finance Bill. Welcome to the committee. Oh, Commissioner, how are you doing?
Mr. Chairman, some of my happiest hours spent in this room, so thank you.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Chair Lucavina, and members. This bill in front of you deals with training and personnel needs for the renewable energy economy. Now that we have renewable energy standards and statements have been made specifically generally in support or against, you know, the next generation of energy technologies and such, I figured it would be a good idea, and along with Mr. Bernstein, who can add to my testimony, that we ask our universities to quantify, identify, and put some brains behind making sure we don't miss opportunity to be a part of the renewable energy economy from the rules that we are, the laws and legislation that we're passing or proposing to passing, to pass this year and in years to come. So this involves Center for Rural Development in St. Peter, and you know it's a pretty short bill in terms of who's going to be involved, but it looks like it's pretty widespread. U of M, MinSQ, Environment, Labor, the usual suspects, and that deed, so contract, and 102,500 is the request. And maybe pick up the pace here, Mr. Bernstein can add his couple cents as to how this came about anyway.
Welcome.
Yes, welcome. Welcome, Mr. Chair. Thank you, everyone. In just to elaborate very briefly on what Representative Peterson said.
With Commissioner, just for the tape.
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Jim Bernstein, Minneapolis, Minnesota. I'm here on behalf a little bit of MinSQ, but also as this bill got started. With the renewable energy standard, one of the questions that we're being asked in higher ed is, what kind of training is going to be necessary, how many workers, what kinds of workers, what kind of backgrounds are they going to need, what kind of programs are they going to need. So at the University of Minnesota, the Humphrey Institute, several fellows there initiated a study, and we came to the point where there are lots of numbers being tossed around, but no one's exactly sure. There are not, some states have already developed programs for both two-year colleges and four-year colleges. What this bill asks is that the Center and Minsky and the University of Minnesota take a look at this issue, determine what kinds of training needs are going to be out there, what kinds of jobs are going to be out there, and then move forward with that. And that's why we're asking for the money, and I'll take any questions.
Questions of the committee. Representative Peterson, for $102,000, we should be able to start set up a program and start training people in the in kind of a hefty amount for a study.
Well, you want a good study, don't you?
What is a big question? But I love the response. That's enough to get the money there. Representative Gunther.
I was just thinking with that kind of response, why would I?
Okay. Sir, would you like to say anything back there?
Yeah, hi, my name is Frank Jossi. I'm a Humphrey Policy Fellow this year, and I live in St. Paul. I'm an independent journalist. And I've written about renewables for a year, including a very interesting program at the Argonne Institute of Technology, where they unveiled the nation's first four-year program in renewable energy. And I told the director at the time, if I ever had a chance, I would try to convince the Minnesota State Legislature to be the second to create such a program. And I really believe that this is an outstanding opportunity at this point to start educating a whole new class of people to work in renewable fuels. So I've been talking to people all today working on different projects around the state for an article for Twin Cities Business Monthly on it. And there's a lot of excitement. Most people I talk to say, yeah, we're going to hire people in the future. And I think we have a great opportunity to train people for those jobs. Thank you.
Representative Mahoney.
Hopefully you can give it just as good an answer as Representative Peterson did. Maybe not, though. How many people does this Argonne Institute of Technology train?
Right now, the numbers are fairly modest. There's 25 to 30. They're going to ramp it up higher. They feel like, I think they're looking at 12,000 jobs over the next 20 years in the Pacific Northwest. Argonne is aggressive. They want to take the majority of that from Washington State. Minnesota's numbers are about 4,000 for the next 10 years, from what I've read, but those numbers are squishy. We'd like to do a little bit better job. And in terms of the cost, there may be a different number we're looking at, a little bit more modest for it, so that could be floating.
Okay, any other questions? Thank you all very much. Nice to see you around here again, Commissioner. I'm sorry I missed my appointment.
We're going to bring you up there pretty quick anyhow, so...
Representative Peterson, any other?
No, thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Okay. Representative Poppe, Representative Poppe moved House Bill 1755 to be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Higher Education Workforce Development Bill. Go ahead, Representative Poppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I have a handout. I don't know if it has been distributed.
Ian is getting ready to distribute it for us.
We are here to present on House File 1755, and I do have an oral amendment.
Yes.
And it is on line 1.12.
Jim Gilpin
moved it. It's a small deletion, the words, the Austin campus of...
Okay. All those in favor, you've heard the motion to amend on line 1.12, eliminate the Austin campus of. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign, motion prevails. Representative Poppe.
Thank you. Actually, Riverline Community College does have campuses in Austin, Albert Lea, and we have a center also in Owatonna. So I want us to be able to expand that. And the information that's being distributed is something from a faculty member, a construction electrician faculty member from Riverline Community College. And that talks about what the proposal is from Riverline Community College. But with me today is Gary Sirk-Benick, who is here to actually discuss his proposal on this. This is a combined effort, and we're hoping to get community-based energy development throughout Minnesota, northern Minnesota, western Minnesota, and southeastern Minnesota. So I'm just going to turn it over to Mr. Sirk-Benick.
Welcome, Mr. Sirk-Benick.
Mr. Chairman, it's nice. My name is Gary Sirk-Benick, representing the Mountain Area Economic Development Authority, and it's nice to see you eye to eye for a change.
Well, I only got one eye that's working here on you, so yeah, I'm trying to read with.
Mr. Chairman, thank you and members of the committee for hearing House File 1755. Our basic idea at Mountain Area Economic Development Authority in northeastern Minnesota is to take advantage of the shift in Minnesota resources to create 6,000 megawatts of new renewable energy by 2025. The state has put that out as a mandate, and that means there's going to be a lot of new generation, and the state also has the interest of having a diversification of energy resources throughout the state, not only in concentrated wind resources in one part of the state, but the state has spent a considerable amount of money through the Department of Commerce identifying high wind areas, and those wind areas exist in southwestern, southeastern, and in fact northeastern Minnesota along the Continental Divide, or the Laurentian Divide. And to that end, the state also has an interest to drive community-based economic or energy projects through their seabed program. The Mountain Area EDA is taking a leadership role establishing a seabed project in northeastern Minnesota of about 24 megawatts in size, a wind project. And we've encountered several difficulties with that. Lack of knowledge among landowners, lack of knowledge of how to put financing together. We need assistance in terms of developing access roads into remote areas, which is a lot different in northeastern Minnesota than farm fields in southwestern Minnesota. And so we've identified several different areas we think the community college systems could work with our local EDA to establish a community-based energy project. And that's why we've brought this bill forward, is to provide some pilot money for pilot projects, work collaboratively with students and faculties at our local community college to establish the necessary skills in financing, land acquisition, roadway layout, pre-engineering, tax syndication, aggregation of projects, and wind studies. One of the great things that we have in our region is one of the best wind study companies actually has one of their offices in Grand Rapids in northeastern Minnesota, and we've contracted with them. The name is WindLogix. They have a desire for trained people as the wind energy industry expands. We think this bill provides some seed money to three Minsky systems that would greatly benefit the local community in the drive towards economic development and diversification of wind resources throughout Minnesota.
Questions of the witness or Representative Poppy? Representative Mahoney and then Gunther.
First, it's a question for the chair. You know, he says your area, but he keeps telling me he lives right next door to you, and he's talking Grand Rapids, and I'm confused with you and Grand Rapids and him and Grand Rapids. So,
well,
he's wrong or you're wrong.
It would be like saying Edina and St. Paul in the same sentence.
So long as the hockey teams win.
That's okay. When they won, it was good.
My one question here is, I'm looking at the piece that you handed out, and the total dollars come to $398 for Albert Lea and Austin, and then the Webley. Is that, are you putting up two wind turbine wind generation towers in each of the Mesabi Range Technical, Minnesota West, and the Riverland campus?
I think I'll just go ahead and answer that, Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, from my perspective, and then Mr. Sirk-Benick could respond from his. At our college, this is the proposal for what we're looking at. Each proposal may be a little bit different, so I know what our construction electrician faculty have already gotten the photovoltaic system, which you may know better what that is exactly, but they've already gotten a grant to start that. And one of the additional things would be a wind generation system. So they're looking at trying to have two windmills in Austin, one in Austin, one in Albert Lea, and be able to then also combine it with the photovoltaic system and be able to educate the students from the construction electrician program at the Albert Lea campus. They'd be able to do that, as well as the K-12 system would be working on how is energy being generated and how are we using it, and what future lies with both the wind generation and the electricity system.
I'm going to give you the money just for that answer.
I think you had a great answer. It's better than Representative Peters.
Yeah. You covered this one too.
Mr. Sirkank, do you care to answer? Representative Mahoney on.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, the question basically is what are we going to do with the money? And what we would do with the money at the Minsky system in northeastern Minnesota is we've already completed a phase one and a phase two wind study on four locations. We've narrowed down to two locations for hot spots. We would work with the faculty and students to do the pre-engineering for the roadway to access the site, put up wind monitoring towers, three of them at those two sites, to confirm that the data that we received from our wind logic study is accurate, to prepare the project for project financing. And the sites actually could hold many more than two turbines, 24 megawatts, which would be as many as 12 to 15 turbines on one site, and the other site somewhere between 20 and 30 megawatts. We would work with the students and faculty to determine the array of those sites, and also work with them on establishing a power purchase agreement with a local utility to purchase the output. So I think we're bringing a lot of neat ideas together and doing a real-world economic development project that would benefit directly the community, and working with faculty and students to prepare for them for what it's like to work on a real project.
Representative Gothman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Stupanik, are one of these hot spots near where Representative Rokovain was?
Right above my house would be a hot spot of all. Especially when I, you know, think about what you did to me at IRRRB, and that it really gets the wind blowing there. And,
so the other day you didn't blame me for that. Now you're changing your mind.
I never do.
But anyway, I just wanted to point out that we're Representative Poppy and I live, we have awful good winds, too. I'm not so sure she's windier than I am or not.
I've noticed going through there, actually, and, you know, if you recall what I believe Representative Westrum did, it was his initiative, I think, at Morris, if I'm not mistaken. Now you drive into that community, you see that it's quite a, I don't know if it's a 2 megawatt, what is it, I don't know. It's been very successful, and I think it makes sense, especially with the 25 mandate or whatever it is now, and the fact that we're getting rid of all of our coal-burning power plants, eventually, with some of the proposals that we start training our workforce into either maintaining or building or whatever these wind generators and all of the other renewable energy. Representative Gunther, if you recall, we did get up at the Hibbing and Virginia Public Utilities the rest of their biomass that was required in the 95 Prairie Island Bill. Mm-hmm. And it was to go online, I think, January 1st, and it did. But guess what? Well, in engineering and all those intelligent folks and all the brain power, the turbines worked okay. But the conveyor system to move the sawdust or chips, whatever it is, it didn't work right. So it took a little bit more engineering and revamping, and I think it finally, did it come online, Mr. Sirkank, here in the last week or 2 weeks?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, it's been online for about 8 days.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a week or two where I come from. But anyway, there had to be, as our, resident construction person, some cleats and everything added to the conveyor system. But these kinds of things could be being taught right now in our Minsky system. So
your favorite power company, Lakes Power, will really appreciate you getting some renewable energy credits.
Mr. Chair.
Representative
Thompson. I just wanted to also respond to Representative Dunther's comment. Yes, we already do have some wind farms in our region. So it is something that has been tried and tested. And one of the proposals, I guess, for us is to be able to develop the workforce, to be able to deal with the fact that we have these wind turbines in our district and in our area. So the electrician students would be able to gather that training and be able to then service those.
My understanding, members, is there's just a real backup of the generators themselves, too. I mean, mm-hmm. You see it, if you see those blades coming in from wherever they're coming in from Europe or China, mm-hmm. and when I'm heading north, every once in a while you'll see them coming down the freeway. You know, I think there's one blade on a, maybe two on a, these long, huge semis, and none of that stuff I know is being produced in this country.
We have a windmill blade manufacturer in Pipestone now.
Oh, that's right. You do have that one down there. Well, good. Well, we'll see them coming north, too.
Here we go.
Okay. Thank you both very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson is in the room. I saw him up there. House File 1773, which I'm sure that Representative Mahoney would love to move House File 1773 for us.
Mr. Chair, I was just reading this bill, and it looks like he's trying to create more foremen and superintendents, so I'm not sure if I really want to move the bill. But I will for you.
Representative Mahoney, House 73 be recommended to pass and held over for
possible. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee. On the agenda, it has Scott White from A&P, and he couldn't make it tonight, so I have Dave Simrod from the Association of General Contractors here if you have any questions. Basically, this bill is being brought forward by the Association of General Contractors, who see the need for qualified and trained individuals who manage the complexities of the modern building systems. Currently, the demographics of the construction industry are a lot like the rest of the population in Minnesota. We're getting older. And as the current group of individuals working as construction managers retire, we need to ensure that there is a pool of qualified individuals with the training to assume these jobs in the future. What the bill does and establishes a 25-cent fee on the non-residential construction permits and to establish a fund to ensure the construction management educational opportunities. And the Association of General Contractors brought this forward. They're willing to put this fund on this fund or this fee on themselves to fund this. They're estimating a raise about $1 million a year that'll go to colleges, you know, the students to go to the colleges in the state of Minnesota. And I stand for any questions.
Any questions, Representative Nelson? I imagine, I'm just curious as to, and I know you've done a lot of things through the Department of Labor industry with the industry, mm-hmm. construction industry itself, but did you think about the Office of Higher Education at all? Or you do have some collaboration between the DALI and the, I'm assuming, MNSCU, but maybe it means all of our higher ed facilities. Did you think about running it, the grants and that through?
The bill was brought to me by the Associate General Contractor. It was their language, and so I can't take credit for thinking of that way or not, either for it or against it.
Mr. Simrod, would you have a comment on that? And why don't you introduce yourself?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm Dave Simrod. I'm the CEO for Associated General Contractors of Minnesota. And members, we worked on this bill for about 3 or 4 years now, and it had its genesis at Minnesota State Moorhead with their construction management program there. As Representative Nelson said, we believe, in my experience personally, has been that there's a tremendous need for additional education in the construction industry. There's a strong need for construction managers, and these individuals work in both the highway and the commercial building sector of our industry, and we just can't find enough people. And we think that by improving the funding situation that we have, that we'll create more and better opportunities, especially for young minority men and women who find the construction industry career path to be something that they would like to choose. So to answer your question, I don't know about the other committees that this has been selected to go through. So we started with Representative Nelson, and we're open to to suggestions wherever we should go next.
Well, if we get a scholarship for Mahoney, can you train him how to be a construction manager and get him the hell out of our area? Or,
Well, we can work on that, Mr. Chairman.
It's way too late for any help.
Mr. Chair, after about 10 years, they might be able to.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Nelson, is there a companion bill in the Senate?
I don't believe so at the current time, no.
There will be one?
But,
Mr. Chair,
I see that I'm looking at the brief here that it's just to public post-secondary institutions. So, Representative Mahoney,
I just wanted to understand, Representative Nelson, or the testifier, is this a grant to the institution? This is not a scholarship for the student, correct?
That is correct, Representative Mahoney.
And I'm looking at the numbers here. Maximum grant of up to $100,000 for an institution, it looks like, or is it multiple maximums of $100,000? So what could an institution get?
A maximum award, Representative Mahoney, a maximum award of between $20,000 and $100,000. Or $25,000 per year for an accreditation award.
Excuse me again, Representative Nelson, what did you say the estimated revenue was or raised every year?
I was told that they're estimating with the amount of permits, the 20 cents per permit will raise about $1 million a year.
Well, good. I'm glad I found some more money for this.
Yes, I'm always happy to bring revenue enhancers for the
Okay, any other questions? This sounds actually very interesting, and I know about the shortage out there too, sir. So, okay, any other questions for the testifier or Representative Nelson? If not, thank you very much for the input and the ideas.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Johnson. I saw he's here too. Representative Johnson, and Representative, Representative Atkins, since you probably put him in the jail, or no, you tried to get him out, will you move House 1497? Representative Atkins moves House 1497 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Welcome to the committee again, Representative Johnson, and your testifier.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I want to thank you again for the opportunity to have a hearing present this bill. House File 1497 appropriates money from the general fund, the Ramsey County Workforce Investment Board, for developing the Building Lives program. And what Building Lives is, it's a workforce program for at-risk youth and young adults, providing employment and training and helping these young people become good tax-paying citizens in our community. And I have with me today Peter Jetson Howard. He's a Ramsey County Youth Council member and also a Ramsey County Juvenile Probation Officer Supervisor. And he's just going to say a few words about the program.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, member of the committee. Very pleased to be here. I also want to thank Representative Johnson for inviting me here today. I also have several members here today supporting. Mary Jo Gartner is the CEO of the Workforce Investment Board. Kirk Hayes, he's with Community Action Partnership, and he is the current chair of our Youth Council in Ramsey County. We also have Terry Zern, a manager with Workforce Solutions. Jan West, the manager with the Hired program, is here. She was also the one who directed Building Lives when it was a federally funded demonstration grant. We also have Craig Anderson from St. Paul College and Chris Crutchfield from the Department of Corrections in Ramsey County. One of the amazing things about Building Lives is that it was federally funded as a demonstration grant and proved to be incredibly successful in helping our adjudicated youth and young adults in providing workforce. Once you give someone a job, they really do remarkably well, whether they're coming out of the Red Wing facility, a more local boys' totem town, or on probation. When Mary Jo Gartner, our current CEO of the WIB, came here just couple of years ago, she looked at all the programs available to her as a workforce option, and she looked and she saw Building Lives, and she says, we need to bring this program back. And that is part of the reason I'm here before you today. As a youth council member, as a person that works very closely with our kind of gang kids, our kids who are at risk of committing crimes, this is one of the few programs that was remarkably successful in helping them and in hence then also saving taxpayer dollars. I'll give you three examples. When the program ended, I wrote the director of our workforce solutions department, and I stated three cases that out of my office I could cite right away. One was an EJJ offender. EJJ, those are the dual sentence kids. They have an adult sentence and a juvenile sentence. So these are kids that have time over their head. This one in particular was a gangbanger here in St. Paul who committed a violent offense. After finishing his juvenile sentence, he started working at a well-known regional bank. And he came in weekly because we require them to come in weekly or we go see them weekly with great pride every week and told us about his job. Another EJJ offender got two jobs and started college while he was in this program. This is not what I usually see of our EJJ offenders. And then another serious offender, he started working in a dental office before completing probation. These kids would come in, and they're not talking the Burger King jobs. They're talking some remarkable jobs at banks, dental offices, and going to college. So at the time the federal grant ended was also the time of the escalation in the war, the cutbacks, and the huge budget here in the state. We looked for some federal money. We couldn't find it. We've talked with our county board members. We've talked with all our partners. We've had a little group that talked. And today we're here at the state and your committee asking you to support this program. The other amazing thing I guess I'd like to say is this program does bring lots of partners in. It brought the city and the county in. When we go out and look at workforce dollars, the mayor was supportive of this program. The county board was supportive of the program. The state, indeed, they list this program as one of the best practices on the website. The federal government, at the time the program was running, we went down to Chicago, we presented the program, and we were giving a Promising Practices Award in November of 2003. We've got community-based organizations here. We've got numerous government agencies. We have business partners who will be coming when they can here. And we have business partners on our board. So I'd ask that you support this program, and I'd be willing to answer any questions. Thank you.
Questions of the witness or of Representative Johnson. Mr. Justin Howard, did DEED ever put any money into this program when you were getting the federal money?
No, they did not.
And was there any local money by Ramsey County or City of St. Paul or anything, that private money that came in?
You know, we could ask the managers of the program that specifically. I remember there was some in-kind dollars that was in this. Also, as a member of the Youth Council, we do like to leverage our money, so some of the administrative costs and other things were certainly used in this.
I think it looks like a very worthwhile program. Representative Johnson, did you talk to Corrections or Public Safety or anybody maybe about some funding, some kind of federal funding they might have to help with this so we could get some help with it? It's not that I'm opposed to trying to find some money, but we don't have that much on the economic
right.
development side of this committee.
And I'll definitely be speaking with those folks about that possibility here in the next few days.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, if I
yes,
could
sir.
Say, the Youth Council does look at WIA dollars, so federal dollars. We also help manage the MYP dollars if they're coming again, which I certainly hope they are. So we do like to leverage that money. And the thing with adjudicated youth is they are some of the most difficult kids to work with. And so having a program that specifically gives them an adult mentor to work with, gives them some good skills, it allows them to really become eligible for some of those federal monies that are out there. Currently, if I were to make a referral of one of my probation, any one of these three, they would look at them and probably not accept them because they also have outcomes to meet. And if I give them a kid who's got an adult sentence hanging over their head, they're not likely to get any services. So workforce dollars need some specific money if it's going to be targeted towards our youthful offenders. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, just curious, does Hennepin County have any programs similar to this?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
One of the things I think, since it is a best practice, I think they are very interested. I have talked with some of the people involved in the Youth Council in Hennepin County, and if we can get this going again, they'd be very interested in replicating this, as well as I think our own practices in the county have changed somewhat because of the success of this program. We understand that this case-managed system works very well.
One additional question, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
I noticed on the sheet that was handed out the age group 16 to 24. 16, is that the youngest, or is that?
That's correct. And I think, speaking from my own experience on the Youth Council, while sometimes there are workforce dollars that go down to 14, especially with their adjudicated youth, the older they are, the more successful they are with these types of programs. Kids seem to have a little bit more investment when they know their education's ending. They do really focus on education with those kids, because without the education, they're not going to be successful in the workforce.
Thanks.
Representative Gunther, I'm assuming that you might have looked at something like this if you were still chair for workforce development funding.
Mr. Chairman, we certainly did. We tried to leverage money wherever we could. St. Paul has a lot of very unique programs. I had a different other side to my committee, and it dealt with MPEP, and they have a program for youth mothers, single kids that have children. And I thought that was a wonderful thing to fund, and we didn't quite have the resources you have, but you're saying you don't have the resources either, and I can appreciate that, because the pie is cut very thinly even today.
Except for Galvin's pie cut.
Yeah, I appreciated it very much, especially sugar-free.
But
you were always high on my list, you're higher.
When you were for the committee here for the freshmen, and we have a lot of newcomers even, your committee at the time handled the MFIP money.
That's correct.
And so you had kind of like this new committee now is looking at higher education and melding the the workforce development projects together. You had the welfare, for lack of a better word, end of it, and
child care
and all of that. Now we don't, but maybe that's another idea for you to look at, Representative Johnson, if there is money that we can leverage from the Fed, it makes it a much more attractive program for us to look at on this committee too, to help you out on that end.
Very good. Thank you for that advice.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Representative Hortman, let's see. House File 1689, Representative Hortman moves that House File 1689 be recommended to pass and laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Hortman. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The bill is very simple. I think the brief of the bill is about the same as the language of the bill. This grant, if it were funded, would help this organization to train people for industries that have high demand for workers. And James Marge is here with me to explain a little bit better about what they do.
Thank you, Representative Portman. Representative Rufavina and members of the committee, I'm Jane Samarja, Executive Director of HIRED, a nonprofit agency that has for 39 years prepared low-income and disadvantaged people, as well as dislocated workers, to qualify for and obtain jobs. I'm here to ask for your support of House File 1689, which would provide an appropriation for HIRED's industry sector initiatives. As you know, workforce development has historically focused on helping individuals to gain skills for entry-level jobs, with the idea that they will gain more specific skills on the job and gradually move up into higher skill, higher paying jobs. The problem with this model is that it has not been closely connected with the real needs of employers. The Industry Sector Initiatives Program, for which we seek your support, has been developed in close partnership with local and regional employers. Together, we have designed a program that focuses on three key features: a clear understanding of employers' needs for workers with specific skills, restructuring training programs to meet employer needs, and streamlining recruitment and hiring patterns in selected industries. Hired is currently managing two sector initiatives. The Empowered Manufacturing Program was launched in 2005 to provide training in metal forming. The advisory group included Hired, Hennepin Technical College, the Precision Metal Forming Association of Minnesota, various other stakeholders, and a core group of eight employers. The program has been recognized and supported by the National Association of Manufacturers, and the number of employers involved has grown from 8 to more than 40. During its first 2 years, the metal forming training program recruited and trained more than 100 low-income individuals and placed 75 in manufacturing jobs. These jobs pay an average of $13 per hour, well above the starting wage for lower skilled work. The financial return on an entry-level placement following just one promotion has been calculated at $38 for every dollar of public and private investment. In addition to programs based at Hennepin Technical College, we provided training in two Minnesota correctional facilities. This training is very portable. And for released offenders who secure employment, the return on investment to the community is estimated at around $78 for every public and private dollar funded. Based on our initial success in metal forming, the Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development has provided funds to develop additional programs that provide basic manufacturing skills training for careers in welding and CNC machining. Hired has also developed a new program, Service First, to train 120 low-income workers for specific jobs in the hospitality industry. This program was recently launched using a training curriculum from the American Hotel and Lodging Association Educational Institute. Our industry partners include several local hotels. The hospitality industry was targeted for its high growth and has the advantage of offering many career paths for advancement. The hospitality industry also absorbs many of our immigrant population because of the languages that they speak. And so if we can get that front-end training in to get them qualified, they can really have a wonderful career path in the hospitality industry. There is a need, though, for sustaining industry sector initiatives. These industry sector training programs address two important issues. The first issue is industry workforce needs. There has been a disconnect between employers' needs for trained workers and the ability of the workforce development and educational systems to efficiently provide them. Looking ahead, we can see the impending retirements of large numbers of skilled workers. We need focused training programs that assure employers a replacement workforce with appropriate skills. Current labor pool demographics show that we have growing numbers of unskilled and non-traditional workers. Our programs are designed to proactively address the need for skilled workers. The second issue is the need to help low-skill, low-income workers focus on training that leads to specific long-term employment opportunities. Many low-income workers who are struggling to support families don't have the ability to take away time from work and invest in education. In traditional systems, short-term, market-based education programs that provide credentials are just not readily available. Our programs are grounded in industry needs, efficient for workers, and result in a meaningful credential or certification. Industry sector training programs supported by this legislation involves the owners and managers of small to medium-sized companies where the bulk of job creation occurs. In each industry sector, employers are at the table from the very beginning to ensure that training programs enroll appropriately screened trainees and effectively train for current and future jobs. The program also provides support help to employees in their first few months on the job. Our industry sector initiatives have been successful because of the commitment of all stakeholders. The appropriation that we seek is support for the development and coordination of new sector initiatives that will train low-income people for jobs that meet the critical workforce development needs of area businesses. We have shown that working directly with employers to develop industry-specific training programs is effective. These partnerships help employers find the workers they need. They help workers gain skills that lead to specific, stable jobs, and they provide a long-term return on the public's investment by increasing employment, helping people to move away from public assistance programs, and generating local economic activity. House File 1689 represents an investment with a tremendous return to the public, and I strongly urge your support. And I would add that the last time we were here in January, you heard from one of our participants, and so I did not bring another participant tonight. Her story was pretty hard to beat, and she's still at work. Thank you.
Okay. Questions of Representative Hartman or Ms. Marja? Representative Denton.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. What are some of the examples of the high demand jobs? I know you mentioned metal, metal forming. What are some of the other jobs that are high demand?
Metal forming, machining, welding. I think Representative Mahoney would support me in saying that you can't get enough welders out there in many industries, and certainly included in those is the pipe fitting industry. We're also looking to start a small plastics initiative right now, plastics manufacturing, in order to get people into the pipeline, into our medical device occupations also. Many people going into those occupations are at a much higher level. We need to get some people in at a lower level. Certainly the renewable energy projects we heard about earlier this evening are others that we will be taking a look at. We wanted also to work with construction in general. Getting these manufacturing and hospitality programs up and running has taken just about all of the time that we've had of a part-time person, so we're very hopeful that with this appropriation we can branch out into some more of these high-demand sectors.
And Mr. Chairman, how many people can you train for 200,000?
We are looking at adding 60 to 75 people a year for $200,000. Our initial program, funded by the National Association for Manufacturers, ran over a two-year period. Its goal was around 100 people, and we actually trained, I think by the time it was completely over, 154 people. We had no problems with recruitment, and as I said, we started out with 8 employers, and we had 40 all over the greater metropolitan area joining us in that initiative. They needed the workers very badly.
Representative Conklin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One good thing about this program is they find employers, then they train people for those employers. There's another program in Greater Minnesota by Park Rapids that does the same thing, and I think these two are both models that we should all look at. They get jobs for people that they train for those specific people, and it's really great.
So, Ms. Marja, I know you had successful accomplishment with the collaboration with the National Association for Manufacturers, and do you have someone in mind now for if you were to get an appropriation? Do you have another group of employers or anyone that you're thinking of approaching or that you have already approached?
We are thinking of approaching employers in the local area that are in plastics, and we're starting to recruit them now because we do have a small grant from Hennepin County to just start in that going, $45,000 or $50,000. And then we're going to be looking into some of these renewable energy firms as well. Thus far, and construction firms, Ryan, some of the bigger construction firms are those we plan to approach as well. So as soon as we have the staff wherewithal to do that, that's our plan.
Okay. Other questions? Thank you very much, then. Thank you both.
Thank you, Representative Rosavina and members of the committee.
Representative Mahoney, House Bill 1929.
Here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. I'd like to move House File 1929 for possible inclusion.
Representative Mahoney moves that House File 1929 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. Go ahead, Representative Mahoney. We're moving along, right along tonight, aren't we? That's great.
Yeah, we could actually be done in time here soon enough to go to our next committee.
I've got two going on. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, committee members, this is an appropriation bill asking for an appropriation of $750,000. This is for the St. Paul Technical College across the highway from us. I'll have introduced Craig Anderson in a moment, but I want to just get the gist of what I'm doing, what I'm trying to do here. We have an industry, and this is for the nano industry in the state, where we have one facility to train the workforce. They put out 13 graduates a year. Every graduate is hired almost before April. We need more of these. And this $750,000 will be used to build a clean room so that it can be shared with anybody in the Minsky system. Right now, they have to spend upwards of over $300 to go to the University of Minnesota or the one other commercial lab to train, where you really don't need that kind of a lab. The lab should really get about $100 worth of rent per hour. So, members, this is a way for us to start training more people, give them good paying jobs right out of the docket, and reduce the cost not only for this particular facility, but for any facility in the state that's willing to start training people. We've got a couple others in the state that are looking at these programs. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Anderson to talk a little bit more in detail.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Anderson.
Thank you, Chairman. My name is Craig Anderson. I'm Vice President of St. Paul College, and I'm also the Chair of the Workforce Committee of the Ramsey County Workforce Investment Board. I spent 22 years of my career in the semiconductor industry before joining Minsky, so I have some familiarity with clean room technology and their uses. And when I heard Representative Mahoney's interest in supporting a clean room environment, I and several of my colleagues talked to Representative Mahoney about the possibility of having one in St. Paul. And I've been working with a private college, Augsburg, and their Department of Physics, and some of their people who also have this interest, and we were actually developing joint curriculum between the two colleges to really help those industries out there who have a critical need for analytical technicians, the people who do assist the engineers and scientists in the areas of bioscience and nanotechnology and a number of other industries. And there really is a critical demand. There's according to statistics that is being put out now, both from DEED and from the federal government, statewide, we're looking at about a 26% increase in the need for these kinds of people in the next 7 years. They're very high-paying jobs, and the type of person that we're looking at only requires a two-year degree. And one person, usually one engineer needs about three or four of these technicians to support them, one scientist or one engineer. And what we're proposing to do is put a clean room, a Class 1000 clean room, here in St. Paul that would service the needs of not only our curriculum, in other words, training students to go out and get those good-paying jobs, but also to have companies who can come in and use that facility to do basic research and do some of the science that they need to do. If any of you have had kids in hockey or ice skating, and you had to book time, you know that sometimes it's 3 in the morning. Well, that's the kind of situation that a lot of the small companies have who are trying to get time at either Evans Analytical out in Chanhassen or what's called CARFAC at the University of Minnesota. And those are clean room environments that are available to be used by the outside companies for research. Also in support of this bill is Minnesota Nano. And probably household words to you, the members of that organization, such as MTS Systems, Medtronic, Seagate Technology, the University of Minnesota, 3M, Honeywell, and others. We are falling rapidly behind the spending curve of the state of Wisconsin. If you look at schools like Chippewa Valley Technical College, they're getting $5.5 million investment to have a clean room environment to train people to in these types of jobs, both in nanotechnology and in biosciences as technicians. It's a two-year program. And as Representative Mahoney indicated, many of these students are hired before they even get out the door. In fact, most of them are. The state of Wisconsin is making huge investments in this area, and I'm afraid that we're kind of falling behind. And we really need to do something here in the area to have additional facilities that can be used for curriculum development, for training people who maintain these clean rooms, who build the clean rooms, who have to do things like orbital welding in a clean room environment. In a lot of the biomedical area, they have to weld these very, very small stainless steel tubing. They have to do it in a clean room environment. And I just talked to a clean room manufacturer today, and he said, you're proposing what? He says, that's what we have a critical demand for. In fact, South Dakota State University is putting one in just to do orbital welding because it's such a high demand right now in the medical device manufacturing industry. So I just hope that you would support this bill, and we have a space available for the facility, and we have curriculum being developed for it. Thank you.
You know, your hockey analogy got me to thinking, because with all the ice time you do have down here and all the arenas and all the student body, those outdoor rinks still beat you in that. So I was thinking, this is really such a good idea, I should steal it, because the air is a lot cleaner up there, so to make a clean room would take a lot less money, probably.
Well, yeah, Mr. Chair, I just don't know what kind of scrubbers you're putting on that power plant and steel mill, but we can go into that if you want to talk about clean air.
See,
but
when's the last time you saw the Northern Lights?
This summer.
Yeah. Well, that's right, because you were up again. Okay, any questions of the witnesses? Representative Norris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wondering, I assume that the Board of Trustees is in favor of what you're requesting?
I don't know about the Board of Trustees. We had a conversation with the Chancellor, and he supports our efforts.
Okay. Mr. Chair, the only reason I brought that up is that I've always thought that everything had to go through the Board of Trustees, and I wasn't accustomed to seeing specific projects for specific campuses without them blessing it first. So,
Representative Mahoney?
No, Mr. Chair, not only did Ms. Anderson and the St. Paul Technical College talk with the Chancellor, I had a conversation with him, and he was very supportive of trying to train people for this, and whether it was here or wherever, I broached this subject with him back in January, and I have to be thankful for Ms. Anderson and coming forth about a month ago with this particular idea and laying out the plan and actually talking to some of the suppliers and trying to put together all the pieces for it. The St. Paul Technical College, for a clean room you need some actual specific kind of spaces, and fortunately over at St. Paul Tech College they do have that particular oddly shaped fixture, and the pipefitters have a facility over there. There's a number of places over trades over there that will be, not only will this do well for the bio and the nano industry and some of the other scientific industries, it'll be good for the trades over there that train, because this is what we're going to be building over the next 20 years, and we'll have an opportunity to learn how to build them, how to maintenance them.
Thanks.
Any other questions? Thank you, Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Committee.
Representative Clark. Representative Clark moves that House File 2127 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Higher Education Workforce Development Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I sure do. And I have one oral amendment to make to this bill, Mr. Chairman. The on line 1.6, where it says 205,000 in 208 to 5,209, it should say 300,000 in fiscal year 208, 300,000 in fiscal year 209. So, Mr. Chairman, in addition to moving the bill, I'd like to move that amendment, which would put it in the order that I intended. It was an error.
Okay. Representative Clark moves to amend 2127 on line 1-6, strike 255 in both places on that line and insert 300,000. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion Revelle, now Representative Clark, moves as amended. Senate House Bill 2127 is amended. Be recommended, passed,
okay,
and held.
And I have one witness who I'd like to speak to this very fine program. And
welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Chairman Bacavina, and also members of the House Committee. My name is Yvonne Chung-Ho, and I'm the President and CEO of Metropolitan Economic Development Association, MEDA. We are a 36-year-old nonprofit with a very successful track record with a mission of helping entrepreneurs of color to achieve success in the free enterprise system. We're dedicated to helping minority businesses to reach parity with the rest of the community. And I have a PowerPoint presentation that, thanks for the page for passing it out. And so I'm just kind of follow that to tell you more, a little bit more about what MEDA does and the successful results that we have. If you turn the page to page 2, as you know, when we develop successful minority entrepreneurs, not only do we foster economic self-sufficiency in those people, but they also become employers. They generate employment, especially minority jobs in when they are successful. They also improve the communities, they're role models, and they also expand the tax base. There's another handout that I just passed out is an article in the Star Tribune featuring one of the clients that we recently helped. It's BCS, African Wholesale Food Supply. It's founded by three African immigrants when they came to this country about 13 years ago. All the time they had a dream to start a business. About 3 years ago, they started that. They came to MEDA for help. We provided them with business consultation and also with financing. The business just started. They started in their garage, and these people were actually working as custodians in nursing homes. We helped them, and now 3 years afterwards, the business grew from about $50,000 to $1.3 million in sales last year, and we were consulting with them. The first 2 months of this year, they already have $250,000 a year, I mean a month, for 2 months. So if we look at that number, so they're actually annualizing to double their revenues this year. It's just 4 years into business with our guidance and financing. And the three guys now are really role models in their community. They really inspire hope for other immigrants in the communities. At the same time, they serve needs for the type of food that they need to buy in that community. The clients that reported to us in 2005, for example, we do an annual survey. The 2006 result will be coming up. They reported sales of over $1 billion, employing about 6,000 people. The thing that we really want to note to you is that for minority entrepreneurs, they're much more inclined to hire people from the communities of color. And based on the 2005 numbers, 57% of their employees are minorities. And because we work with people in different industries like construction, manufacturing, wholesale, so the jobs are not just jobs, but they're quality jobs. For those people that reported to us, 62% of them provide health care to their full-time employees, and 89% said they pay $10.50 or more to their employees. And MEDA is very unique because we provide one-on-one business consulting with our in-house consultants. We also provide access to business networks, which is something that for many minorities they really don't have. And we also run the Minnesota Procurement Technical Assistance Center, helping businesses to win government contracts in the state. And we provide other training development programs. And our clients are represented in many industries, as I mentioned before. Therefore, they provide quality jobs. We have in-house professionals to provide consulting. Our PTEC counselors help people to pursue government contracts. And we also are very good in leveraging the investment the state put in MEDA with federal and also corporate and also program and private donations, so that we leverage that to a budget of about $2.5 million a year. We're 36 years old. Since 1971, we have helped over 14,500 entrepreneurs and helped the startup of about 365 businesses and made many loans. And 2006 was another successful year for us. Just that one year, last year alone, we helped the startup of 19 new businesses with 163 jobs, projected first year revenue of $10 million. So the results are very significant. As we move forward, I mentioned to you, we also operate the Procurement Technical Assistance Center, which really works to build Minnesota businesses by helping them to win government contracts. And in 2006, we brought in $236 million in contracts to small businesses in the state. And because PTEC is part of NIDA, so we also make sure that PTEC helps with minority businesses. And 2006, $109.5 million in those contracts are awarded to minority businesses. And in the few charts that are following, I kind of show you based on, in terms of PTEC, the spread of their work in the entire Minnesota, Northern Minnesota, an example, a Native American business, Wells Technology, they got $29.6 million in contracts because of our help. And then Signal Construction, when we were in Representative Rocavina's office, that's someone in Duluth, in your home city, and another construction company that we helped to bring government contracts. In central Minnesota, a woman-owned business getting contracts. Other examples, we also listed that southern Minnesota and also the metro area. Most of these businesses are very small businesses, and those contracts mean a lot to them, and because of that, they can create and retain jobs. The current funding we have from the state is through DEED is $155,000 a year. We're asking you to support NIDA, our program, to increase that to $300,000 a year. For that additional investment, we want to increase NIDA's capacity to serve entrepreneurs of color. And also, we're looking to intensify our regional coverage to assist small businesses in greater Minnesota to win government contracts. Together, when we look at PTEC and NIDA, help in terms of job creation by translating the efforts to over 10,000 jobs. So it really represents a huge return on investment in the state in terms of job creation and retention. That wraps up my presentation. I would entertain any questions, and I really ask for your support for MEDA.
Okay. Any questions for the witness? By the way, Duluth isn't my home city. But then Barry Anderson on that Capitol report, he introduced me as the Supreme Court guy as Tom Recavina from Duluth. So, but I got him back three times in 1 hour.
I am sorry.
That's okay.
Yes, very
Leonard Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And we all know the Rangers get payback. Representative Clark, you and I have funded this specific account for a long time.
Yeah.
Don't they leverage a lot of money, besides doing a very good job, don't they leverage an awful lot of money? And, I look at what they produce versus what they cost. This is one of the best fighters we got.
It is, Mr. Chairman, and I think we might even be able to give you the number of the ratio leverage. Thank you very much, Representative Gunther. From the investment the state has provided to NIDA, our budget, as I mentioned earlier, is about $2.5 million. 30% of that is from corporate contribution. Another 10% is from private foundations. We also do a lot of fundraising through events, and we also leverage that with federal funding. So the $300,000 represent about just a little over 10% of our budget. So 90% of that will be leveraged from other sources. But thanks for that, because I remember you and I also went to a site visit on one of our clients, Chippewa Graphics, a Native American-owned commercial printer that NIDA helped start quite a number of years ago.
Thank you, Representative Gunther, for bringing that up.
Okay, any other questions? Well, thank you both very much.
Thank you very much.
Well, and it was nice meeting you again.
national sphere, I guess.
Chairman, can I just say, I'm sorry that I'm not in this committee right now. I'm chairman of the committee. I'll be back as soon as I can.
Well, you won't be because I've got the last bill up tonight. We've been moving right along, Representative Clark. Maybe because you weren't here to ask questions. I don't know. But we...
Welcome to the committee, Representative Rukavina.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could I move my gun?
Yes, you may.
Well, I'd like to move that House File 1457 be recommended to pass and held over to possible inclusion in the omnibus. So it doesn't cost any money.
It's a problem.
Thank you. Very good.
Members, I'm just throwing this bill out here for a discussion because, you know, one of the things that I've noticed in being around here for years is that oftentimes we forget about a lot of the people that are in the trenches. And so I had added some two members to the current 15-member board of Minsky, but I added three, five members will be from labor, and I've retained the three students, although my understanding is the students have a little problem with the fact that I sunsetted the language where they have some input into the process, which was never my intention to get rid of that input by the students. So I'd like to say that publicly on the record, and I realize that there could be certainly a lot of discussion on this bill. I phased in the AFL-CIO and the AFSCME appointments out there in 2010 and 2012. And with that, members, I guess I'd stand for any questions.
Yes, Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Representative Rukavina, can you please describe to me, to make sure I got it right, the makeup of the board under your suggestions and who approves it?
Well, I should have mentioned early on that the governor would be appointing
three
members, as would basically the House and the Senate. And then the other members, the student members and the union members are described in law, so if that answers your question. Did I forget to mention that I changed the appointment process? Yeah, I did forget to mention that. That was an oversight on my part, Representative. But that's how it would work, that the governor and the speaker of the House and the committee on committees in the Senate, whatever it's called, would have the three appointments.
Did you have another comment? Yeah,
one small one.
Sure.
Being this is a policy bill in a finance bill, the governor cannot line item this part if he hated it very, very much. And the whole bill would go down. Is that correct?
Well, I certainly think that Governor Pallante is a little more common sense approach to a specific thing than that. I don't think he'd veto this bill merely for that, with all the other good things that are hopefully going to be in it, Representative Gunther.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Representative Rukavina, when Representative Trimble was chairman, I remember Carlson vetoing the whole bill for something very similar to this.
Well, Madam Chair, let me just say this to Representative Gunther. When Arne Carlson was governor, I was told that he was going to veto my entire bill because of something I put in it too, but he didn't do that. So, you know, it must be just the good way I have of working with people that prevented that from happening in the past, and I would hope, having met with the governor, incidentally, today.
Did you mention this?
Privately. No, we never asked about it. He never asked about it. Representative Gunther, let me put my glasses on so I can see you with two good eyes instead of just one. Here. Because I did meet with the governor, he had some suggestions as to what he would want to see of his program.
but he never at all mentioned this. I can tell you that in all honesty. And, of course, I didn't bring it up either. Why would I? It seems like such an innocuous little bill that I, you know, there are a lot more important fish to fry around this place than this, so.
Representative Ornette.
But, Madam Chair, I will say, yes. I'm glad that Representative Gonsalves is bringing this up for discussion because I certainly didn't think of all the things that may be in this bill that this would be the reason it got vetoed.
Representative.
Madam Chairman, I hope he pays attention to what he just said. There better be a lot of things that he likes.
Representative Narnas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Rosavino. My question, I guess, has to do with the current makeup of the board. In my experience on this committee, in my experience with the board and with the chancellor and so forth, I think things have been working out pretty well. I'm wondering what's motivating you to then all of a sudden make this change. And is there something wrong with the current board of 15 members?
I'm not saying there's anything wrong. I'm trying to expand it to many of those folks who work there, like I said, Representative Arnett, in the trenches, be they the teachers or the professionals that administer the programs, like Representative Poppy or the janitors or maintenance people that keep it going, because I believe their input is just as important as some of the people who end up on the board. So, you know, I'm not saying any certain person on the Board of Trustees right now is not doing a great job or whatever. I'm just trying to expand it.
Madam Chair, Representative Rukavina, isn't it possible that those folks that you mentioned can be selected under the current system? Is there any reason they're excluded?
Madam Chair, new Madam Chair. But I think if you did a little history of who's been on the Board of Trustees, Representative Lawrence, that would be, you'd be hard pressed to find some of the folks that, from the organizations that I'm trying to put on. Can I be excused from testifying on my own bill? Or
would you like to recess? Did I call the chair?
I think there's a roll call going on in the Finance Committee. But
would you like to
I guess, Madam Chair, if I could just make one more comment. I guess I don't have a problem with these folks that you've outlined in the bill being at least possible members, but to have, I guess, non-elected officials making selections to the board is a little troublesome.
Well, and as I said, Representative Nornis, I'm open to suggestions. I wanted to just get the issue out there, and being that there's no other place for me to have heard this, I wanted a policy hearing on it here this evening. So I'm open to suggestions, and I'm sure I'm going to get a lot of them.
Madam Chair,
my
best advice to the new chair would be to not change the current system for fear of adding a little problem in the session. I think we could be running a lot smoother if we don't have to deal with this.
Well, after listening to the, a lot of the students that have come in here and talked about the predicament that they're in, possibly for the rest of their lives, I don't know if the status quo is working either. And whether we can blame that on the Board of Trustees or maybe our own selves here at the legislature, once in a while it doesn't hurt to shake things up, Representative.
Madam Chair and Representative Rukavina, having a student member of that board, I don't think would have changed anything.
Well, there are student members of the board now.
What's that?
Representative Rukavina, would you like to recess to the call of chair so that you would have an opportunity to vote in the other committee, or would you like to continue?
They probably don't need my vote. They've got enough extra votes over there, so I'll just stay here until somebody comes back and gets me, Madam Chair. But Representative Norris, there are three members, three members on the
right. So that's why I'm not sure.
Board of Trustees.
What you're gaining here by doing?
Well, I'm specifying that a lot of the working people at the university system or at the Minsky system are also represented on the Board of Trustees, like the business community is represented, like the students are represented, like other segments of society are. and that's the reason I put the bill out here for discussion. Whether it ends up like this or not is a totally different, you know, especially now that Representative Gunther put us on notice that he's going to have the governor veto the bill over it.
He's going to bring it to his attention.
Okay. Representative Detmer?
Madam Chair, Representative Rupadina, I guess if it's not broken, why do we want to fix it? It goes along with the same question that Representative Norris had. And wouldn't it make a more political process if both majorities from the Senate and the House and the unions get involved in the selection process?
Well, Representative Detmer, I don't know if it's any less political than when the governor makes all the appointments. So, you know, I don't know if it makes it any more political or any less political. I'd say it's certainly not apolitical now, the process.
Do you have a follow-up for Senator Detmer?
Well, I guess the first part of my question, is it really broken and does it need to be fixed?
I don't, like I said, I don't think that all the blame can be placed on the Board of Trustees any more than all the blame should be placed on the legislature for what we've done to our higher education system in the state. But, you know, the legislature has a big say, as you saw a week and a half ago, I believe it was, in who gets put on the Board of Regents. And so this is just, you know, food for thought out there. On the legislature having a say on who gets on the Board of Trustees for a system that educates way more of our students than the university does. So, you know, I'm not expecting unanimity on anything I introduce. I guess I've had it a few times. you know, it doesn't hurt to get your thought process moving. Representative Detmer, as a teacher for 30-some years, you know how I'm sure you just toss stuff out there to your students to think about, and that's what I'm doing with this piece of legislation.
Representative Rukavina, we've got a couple more people who want to ask questions, and we do have somebody who wants to speak in opposition, just so you're aware of it.
Governor Shaw?
No, I don't believe it's the governor. Representative Welty?
Thank you, Chair Poppy, and to Representative Rukavina, or Chair Rukavina. I have, first of all, a question and a comment. My question is, when I read this, unless I'm reading this wrong, I count up 18 members. Unless you're saying that the IFO is appointing the member from MSCF and MAPE and ASME, and so there's not an IFO member on there, but otherwise I count 18 members. Do you have an answer to that?
Well, I think there's supposed to be just 17 members, but maybe council can help me out on where.
Madam Chair,
we're the floating member.
Did the chair go to the Minsk?
Ms. Novak, can you help me out? Do I have a floating member somewhere?
I'll tell you what.
Chair
Poppy, while Ms. Novak is
looking
at that. Representative Rukavina.
12 and 5.
I could see. This legislation may be positive in your perspective, but what I worry about is, let's say, 10 years down the road, 15, 20 years, maybe even 40 years down the road, the legislature changes hands and who's in control. And at that time, I think the members might take a look at this legislation and want to change it back, maybe in their favor for some reason. What I have seen in government operations the last 2 years that I sat on that, the most widely accepted legislation that was brought forward is when we tried very diligently to divide up the responsibilities of who appoints by majority and minority in both bodies. And I'm wondering, as we move forward, if you'd be willing to take a look at that so that we don't have this coming back every time the majority switches hands, and that we put close to equal responsibility for appointments in the majority and the minority, so that we try to eliminate the politics of this as much as possible, if you can do that. But I'm just making that point in a question.
I don't have a problem with the minority leaders in both the House and the Senate having an appointment at all. And like I said, I didn't mean to repeal the input from the students either. So, I mean, there certainly needs to be some improvement to this bill without a doubt. But again, I was just throwing it out there because I don't know if there is enough representation by the people that work in that system. And that's what I was intending to do, aside from the students that have some input right now. But I can guarantee you one thing. I don't need $102,000 to do a study to decide which what we should do here.
Right.
We either do something or nothing, but we won't spend $100,000.
We'll have Ms. Novak answer the question that Representative Welty asked.
Madam Chair and members, I think the number adds up to 17. There are 9 appointments, 3 by the governor, 3 by the House, 3 by the Senate. There are 5 organizations that appoint. That's 14. And then there are 3 students, and I believe that's 17.
I was finding one out there somewhere.
Right. Well, if there's an extra one, we'll put in statute that you get it.
Appreciate that.
All right. Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. You know, the governor appoints 15 today, and the Senate has oversight over those 15. So we have checks and balance. What do we have under your system?
We have checks and balances because we get as much input as the Senate.
There's no one checking out what the other one does. The Senate has no ability to cancel out any errors the House makes, not that we ever made a mistake. And we have no ability to cancel out what they do. And neither one of us have any ability to cancel out what the governor does. So what we have is we have a system without any checks and balances, and we're doing that to replace something that we have total checks and balances on. And I really think that what we have today is a much fairer, much more balanced system.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Chair.
I think the appointment process that's in this bill would itself, have some degree of accountability. And given the suggestion by Representative Welty, would certainly make it more fair. I don't think that the appointments to the Board of Trustees gets the scrutiny that the either commissioner appointments or the regents process has. And the regents process might be the best of all worlds because I think it gets a lot of scrutiny. And we've attempted to fix, to try to make the regents process better. And I think in the process of trying to make it better, we've made it worse. But that's my own personal opinion, Representative Gunther, because I guess the bottom line on the regents is it's pretty hard to change the Constitution without a constitutional amendment to change it, which we saw this year, because the bottom line is we all have a vote regardless of what we put in statute. But back to this process here, again, I'm trying to open it up a little bit so there's more involvement by all of the members of the legislature. And again, I was only trying to, in my mind, to improve the input of the Board of Trustees by giving those that have a stake in the Minsky system a little bigger voice.
Representative Gunther.
Representative Gunther, I'm not going to certainly fall on a sword for this piece of legislation, but I think it deserves some serious discussion that the people that go there to work every day, that teach our students, that train our students, that take care of that whole system, be they technicians or MAFE employees or AFSCME employees, right now, currently, really don't have a lot of input into that, the running of that entire system. So, call me just to, iron range and do me for... thinking that the people that work there should have a pretty good say in it too, and the students that go there do have a say in it now, and we'll still have one with this proposal. So
Evidently, Mr. Chairman, I have more faith in good union negotiations than you do.
Representative Detmer.
Madam Chair, and Representative Rukavina, I'm just trying to pick your brain here, and I'm trying to learn here, but your bill also repeals Statute 136F03 and 136F04. Now, am I correct that both the House and the Senate make recommendations to the governor on an advisory council identifies recruits for qualified candidates and make recommendations to the governor for the non-student members of the board? So basically we already have, I'm just learning here, basically already have input and who the governor has to choose from.
Representative Rukavina, perhaps Ms. Novak might be able to add something.
Yes, and I was going to call on Madam Chair, but I was going to say on the repealing of the student recommendations I had mentioned earlier, Representative Detmer, that I intended to do something because the students were concerned about their not having input on it too, and I unintentionally repealed that part of it also. But regarding the 136.03, maybe Council can help.
Sure. Ms. Romer?
Madam Chair and Representative Detmer and members, the legislature has an indirect role in the advisory council. It shares appointments for the members of the advisory council, but the recommendations of the advisory council all go, and there are no legislative members on the advisory council. They just make the appointments to the advisory council, and then the advisory council makes its recommendations to the governor, who under current law appoints all of the members of the board.
Okay, Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Rukavina. I really don't have a question. I actually a little bit of tweaking. I think this is a good idea to put our members who work there along with members that are appointed by bodies that represent the people who go there. I mean, my district has a ton of people who go to the Minsky system, and frankly, I don't have any input into who sits on the Board of Trustees. I mean, I could, depending on the governor, I guess maybe I might be able to write a letter. I'm not sure how soon it would get open sometimes. Either party. But no, I think this is a good idea to bring it back to the People's House and to the two chambers to have input in that particular fashion. You're right. We get so busy up here, sometimes these type of appointments don't get the scrutiny that they need, and we end up not having the board that we probably, our students deserve to have. Not that it's a bad board, it's just that they don't get the representation. I appreciate you bringing this bill forward.
Well, members, Madam Chair, as I said, I threw it out there for fodder for you and for input. And Representative Gunther, heard from Representative Detmer, perhaps we should have some members on that advice report, legislative members.
I got a great idea.
Or perhaps you should just make me,
I probably could buy better.
I believe, Chair Rukavina, that the time we made up in the 10 previous bills, you now.
I said that as I was coming up. That's why I saved it for last.
Very good.
Everyone has the opportunity to shut up and go home.
Well, I think we're taking the opportunity to explore more options with this. Representative Welty is next, then we have Nornes and Gunther. So that's the listing right now. So if you want to be added, raise your hand, but Representative Welty.
Thanks, Chair Papian. And Chair Rukavina, a suggestion that I had just looking at this list, I also agree that it's nice to have people who work in the occupations or fields represented on boards. And I'm just wondering, as we look at the breakout of those that you have appointed by the organized labor organizations here, if you wouldn't be willing to instead say, three employees of or four or five employees of and put that into statute as well, knowing that they could be appointed by and recommended by those organizations.
Madam Chair.
Chair Rucavina.
If this decides, this bill, if we vote to keep going with it, at the time we're putting our bill together, I'm willing to have any input and any suggestions that any of you have from both sides of the aisle.
Right.
Just to follow up at that, I'd be happy to work with you to draft some legislation that maybe we could get input and agreement on from both sides here.
Representative Norness.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess just a final comment, Representative Rucavina. Again, unless we can identify a problem, in my opinion, the current board or the current system has been working quite well, and I think most Minsky would agree with that. So for that reason, I commend you for some effort, but I think that we've got more important things to do right now.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Representative Mahoney gave me an inspiration as usual. Representative Rucavina, one of the problems I have is the Senate, as a body, go and they pass on everything that happens. They have to approve everything. I think it's appropriate that in this legislation, instead of putting all these new members in there, we simply say that five members from the House and five members from the Senate appoint or look at what the governor's recommendations are to accept or reject it. Instead of having the Senate do it, let's jointly do it. Because I've always felt that way. I don't even have a powder to wait.
Representative Rucavina, I think you had a lot of work ahead of you.
Are there any other questions for Representative Rucavina on this bill? We do have someone who would like to speak in opposition. So Ms. Smith is going to come down and... Please identify yourself for the record and then go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. Aisha Smith with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. The Minnesota Chamber of Commerce is the state's largest business organization with over 2,600 members. 80% of those have 100 or fewer employees. We are definitely on the receiving end of a lot of the students that come out of MinFU. And the president of the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, David Olson, is on the Board of Trustees for MinFU.
Now.
Right now, yes. And we've spoken with him. This has not been an issue that's been brought up with the current board. And in working with MinFU, we're often asked by the chancellor and other officials for the business input. And if there's not enough business input a lot of times. And we can't think of a better way of having business input than having business members on the board. So we would suggest that if Representative Rucavina would like to do this, that we also put an equal number of business representatives on the board as well. And I'd be happy to answer any questions and work with him in the future on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. Chair Rucavina, do you have any comments to that point or any final comments?
Well, Madam Chair, I think there's nine other positions that probably are right now filled with business people. And in fact, Representative Gunther, since Mr. Olson from the Chamber sits on there as president, I wonder when the last time that Ray Waldron or his equivalent was on the MinFU board. I'll bet you if we check
appropriate.
That it hasn't been for quite some time. And in fact, for the first time in history that all of us could remember, the labor person on the Board of Regents was eliminated when the former speaker refused to hold the joint convention for the Board of Regents election. So, you know, maybe that's a good... I thought I eliminated Olson's position in the bill.
Madam Chair, if I might, Representative Rukavina, I actually think Ms. Olson has a point. Business does need to be at the table, and I think we can make that work out somehow or another if we can push this bill forward.
Are there any other questions? I think it was probably...
Madam Chair, I apologize for all the time I took on.
Thank you very much. I think we'll just hold this one over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Without further ado, I think meeting adjourned.
Oh, minute.
Oh, we could do minutes. Okay. Representative Norton is first to stand up, so we'll have him.
Beautiful minutes.
Okay.
All in favor,
say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. Minutes are approved, and meeting is adjourned. Thank you.